Yes, it's the Vulture's Nest. Good morning. You are on to SER 107.3. My name is Sean Morahan. Thank you to Andrew Popel for another fine final draft. Each week here on 2SER in the Vulture's Nest, we explore some of the strange news of the week and we try to make it even stranger. My guest in the news today is David Polterak, no stranger to the program. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Sean. Good morning.
Look, later in the program today, we are going to look at a story about some very powerful graffiti. But to kick off with, and perhaps that's probably the wrong verb, to hit off, to serve, open the serve this morning in the Vulture's Nest.
Lob one over, Sean.
That was a very good smash there, David. And so enough of those tennis puns for at least the next 10 seconds while I announce the story. Ash Barty, Australian tennis player. She was accused of using a baby to deflect journalists after her match where she lost at the Australian Open tennis this week. So maybe just to set the scene, David, for you personally, are you a tennis fan?
Look, I have a sort of a very superficial interest in it, but I don't watch it. It's like cricket to me.
Yes.
It's just too much time.
A mutual friend of ours, Kieran, who is a big sports fan, live sports fan. He goes and sees a lot of live sport, and I think he goes to the Australian Open at least every second year.
Wow.
Have you seen his social media posts from...
He's been down there, has he?
He has.
Oh, no, I haven't seen them.
Yeah.
I'm some B's friend. I thought I was.
Yeah, well, that's it. I thought he was a mutual friend. Yeah.
He's a friend in real life, but perhaps not a Facebook friend. And they're the ones that are more real.
So he's been posting photos, apparently the Australian Open, to encourage social media engagement of the people who are at the event. They have cameras that take photos of people in the audience, and that might even be a video camera, I'm not sure. But Kieran has been reposting a lot of photos of him with the Australian Open logo embossed into the image. And it's of him sitting there bored doing various things, like he's picking up his shoe and talking into it as if it was a phone. There's some of him, holding up his drink. There's some of him pretending to nap. And a lot of the other people around him too seem very disengaged. So I couldn't help but comment how exciting a game tennis is.
Has he actually been picked out is he being singled out as a character?
It looked like that. However, it could be like the kiss cams in American sporting events. They just basically keep the camera roving. So everybody gets a chance for their 5 seconds of fame on the big camera.
Does he wave screen. At the camera when he sees himself on the big screen?
Well, I only got stills, so I don't know if any of them were... waving, but he's definitely playing it up for the camera.
Right.
Yeah, with the shoe phone and things like that.
Yeah. So you'd have to keep it up for a long time if you weren't to know when the camera was on you, wouldn't you? off chance.
And maybe that's the only reason he goes down to the Australian Open is to interact with his social media tools for the Australian Open.
There's that guy who holds his shoe to his head for the whole match.
Well, getting back to Ash Barty. So the Australian tennis player Ash Barty, she got through, she was in the final four for the Australian women's, well, sorry, for the Australian Open for the women's tennis, and she was the first Australian woman to get to the final four, I think, in 26 years.
Oh, so close.
Yeah. So she's developing a really nasty reputation as being a thoroughly pleasant person, which I think that's going to get her into all sorts of strife.
Yeah, that's got to stop.
You know, this genuine thing and, you know.
Yeah, it makes my stomach turn.
Great sportsmanship or sportswomanship.
Yeah, where did she get off?
So,
It's so un-Australian.
Yeah, she needs to hang out more with their cricket team.
Where's the sledging? So
it was 40 degree heat. She lost to American Sophia Kennan on Thursday, going down straight sets. And then afterwards she had her media conference. And she appeared at the media conference holding her 11-week-old niece, Olivia. And Barty said that was partly, you know, having her niece there was helping her put the loss in perspective, that there's more things important in life than... just, you know, winning or losing a tennis match. So she, you know, she shrugged off the loss. The criticism that she's got is, part of it that she's got from journalists is that she was using the baby as a human shield.
Poor baby.
So firstly, that implies that she was under attack, that she needed to have a shield. So it's funny, they've continued the attack after the incident.
Yeah.
Do you think sports journalists are aggressive enough to warrant having some sort of shield, whether it's deliberately a human or not?
It depends on who they're interviewing. I mean, and I think she's, because she is such a nice person and seems genuinely nice, I mean, if I was to discover that, in fact, that's all an act, that she's been trained to be nice and isn't really nice, that'd be akin to finding out that Santa Claus isn't real, you know, which I know isn't true, but I'd be shocked. And so I think, you know, journalists have given, I'm not going to say they've given her an easy ride. She's just been good. She does a great interview. I mean, she's eloquent. She's a nice person. She's got things in perspective. So I don't think she's ever had the need to be defensive in front of the press.
She's 23 years old. Do you think the press, among others, are partly bewildered that somebody at 23 has got their act together so well?
Yeah, I think they're a bit bewildered by, you know, she's a bit of a curveball, as it were, in their world, particularly of sporting champions. So I really don't think, I mean, if it was a cynical exercise, you know, to deflect hard questions about her loss by holding the baby, you know, you'd have to think, well, what sort of planning went into that? You know, when was the decision made to bring the baby to the match? You know, everybody thought she was going to win. You know, is she planning that far ahead? You know, is she thinking, look, there's an outside chance I might lose. You know, can one of you members of my family who've recently given birth, you know, bring your infant to Flinders Park? That's where they hold it, isn't it?
I plead ignorance.
Somewhere in Melbourne.
Yeah. I've been past it, but I don't know what it's called.
Was she playing on the Market Court Arena?
Rod Laver Arena.
Rod Laver Arena.
Yeah.
I mean, it would take a lot of forward planning to be cynical enough to do that with a baby. And so I think it really speaks for the cynicism of journalists rather than any kind of supposed cynicism or defensiveness on Ms. Barty's part.
Yeah. So there are many articles about this. The one that we chose was from the Daily Mail. They've referenced a BBC tennis commentator, David Law, who told the tennis podcast he didn't think Olivia, that is the baby, should have joined Ash to face the media. He says, I think it is a place of work. It's an office space. We are there to ask questions. And as lovely a sight as it was on one hand, it's not really what's supposed to go on, he said. Fellow commentators Matt Roberts and Catherine Whittaker agreed about the unusual post-match sight.
Look, I think that's a bit harsh. I mean, given that parliamentarians can breastfeed in the office, I can't see that, you know, bringing a baby into a post-match press conference.
Well, not just parliamentarians. Can anybody?
Anybody.
Any mother can breastfeed in the office?
Yeah. But I think what is interesting about this is that it's possibly true that journalists did hold back, possibly with hard questions, maybe critical of Ash Barty's performance in that match, because she was holding the baby, you know, whether or not it was intended on her part. So it leads me to think that people could take a lesson from this, and if they're about to face hard questions themselves, like, say, Parliament opens soon. Scott Morrison, he's under a bit of pressure. He should turn up in Parliament with a couple of babies. I think Bridget McKenzie should arrive in the Senate with a litter of puppies. You know, there's no limit there.
Well, he's held up coal in Parliament before, so, you know, it's just a matter of swapping a coal for a baby for some sort of perceived political advantage.
And that piece of coal meant a lot to him. He was very affectionate towards it.
Yeah. I remember when this sort of started happening with rugby league, and to me it seems like 10 years ago, but it's probably longer, when grand finals, you know, the winning grand final team would all bring their, you know, have a kid in each arm and one in tow to walk around the field for their victory lap after the game. And I was going, what are those kids doing there? They didn't put in the yards.
But look, yeah, what is ANZ Stadium but an office?
Did you have any do you remember seeing that with the rugby league players when it happened? It's ubiquitous now in rugby league.
Yeah. I mean, it would be interesting to know who did it first. But I mean, there's now that ritual too, where players will more often than not run out onto the field holding the hand of some, you know, young player in the same uniform, the kiddie version. And so little kids are everywhere in the game now. I mean, it's only a matter of time before they take to the field in play with the adults, I think.
Okay, so we're getting that level of impartiality in selection. It's, you know, everybody gets a fair go.
Everybody, yeah.
It's like a Rocky opportunity every game.
That's right.
In fact, it just occurred to me, a picture just flashed into my mind of Greg Mortimer from Canterbury doing it. So that's a lot longer than 10 years ago.
That's a while ago, yeah. Yeah. And that was a grand final, was it?
I think so, yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, lots of matches, I mean, players will, you know, run around the field afterwards, you know, holding a baby.
Yep. Now, I guess the difference here was it wasn't Ash's baby. Do you think there's some critics are going to say, you know, if you're going to bring a baby, it needs to be your own?
Where do you draw the line?
Have we heard the end of the complaints from the journos about this yet?
And how old can the baby be?
I mean, hashtag not all journos. Yeah,
what if she turned up with, say, a second cousin who was 12? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a slippery slope.
So are there things that you think journos could say and ask to Ash Barty that they can't say and ask in front of an 11-week-old?
Look, logically, no. So I don't know that the baby, that Olivia, in this case, had an opinion on the match. I don't know whether she saw it. I don't know whether she even knew what was happening. What's Auntie doing out there with that thing making all that noise? I don't know. I mean, would Olivia have been offended at some of the questions possibly? Maybe the journalists are reading too much into a baby.
Yeah. If we had an 11-week-old in the studio today, do you think it would change how you react to my questions?
Yeah, would it cramp my style?
It would?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, put that baby down. And the other one.
What about any questions you fire back to me, would you know?
Yeah. Well, I suppose that there is that thing in comedy that, you know, going back to our other endeavour, that, you know, we do feel a bit compromised when there are youngsters in an audience. But that's more the effect that they have on the rest of the audience, and then that feeds into the kind of general response. But I don't think that a baby at a tennis match is going to do anything in terms of the performance of the players. Although, look, big question, was the fact that Olivia the reason Ash Barty lost?
Oh, see, none of the journos ask those sort of hard-hitting questions, David. I think you've got another career ahead of you if you want it.
Yeah, that has to be looked into.
Do you think the journos are maybe being conditioned to dealing with infantile behaviour? Perhaps, I don't think there's any need to even mention any names, is there? You've probably got, if you know anything about tennis, you've probably already got a few images in your head of different tennis players over the years, that they get completely thrown by someone who isn't acting like an infant but yet has one in their arms.
Yeah, I look at, you know, maybe that just confused them. You know, maybe they weren't sure who they should be asking the questions.
And overall, are you a big fan of having kids at work?
Look, doesn't worry me. I suppose if they're noisy, that might be a problem.
Yep.
It's more the kid in the adult, I think, that is the issue. Adults behaving like children, I mean.
Yeah.
I haven't been in a situation where people have brought kids to work. I think someone might have brought a dog. I find that a bit funny.
Yeah.
Peculiar, I mean. Dogs aren't inherently humorous.
There's a lot of YouTube videos that would argue otherwise.
Well, that's true. That's true, yeah. So, but look at, you know...
I think your point still stands. I'm just saying, because I'm not citing YouTube as a complete final say on the subject. I'm just saying that there's volumes of evidence for the affirmative is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so you think the presence of a baby might lift performance?
Oh, no, I was referring to the dogs.
Oh, to the dogs.
Being funny.
Right. Yeah. Oh, dogs being funny. Yeah, no, well, I suppose it depends on what they're doing and how you edit it.
Yeah. I guess, too, part of it could be, you know, a lot of people go to work because they've got mouths to feed, and if the mouth to feed is right there next to them, maybe that helps them focus better with their work.
Too true. Yeah. Most people get away with just putting a picture on their desk. To generate that effect.
Well, maybe a little shout out to a comedy colleague of ours who now works in the UK. He put a picture of himself as a child on his desk at work, and people would see it and say, cute kid, and he took it as a personal compliment. Congratulations, Richard Lindsay, on that one.
That's good, that's good.
That is. You're on The Vulture's Nest with Sean and David. We've been talking about Ash Barty's clever but maybe not so planned move this week. After her loss in the Australian Open, she brought her niece, 11-week-old Olivia, to the press conference, and a lot of the journos were completely thrown by that. Another story that grabbed our attention out of the news this week was about some very powerful graffiti. We're going to be talking about that very shortly. But before we do, we're going to listen to Do What You Want Always by Bored Nothing. You are on 2SER 107.3, Stories, Ideas and Music.
Sitting around can't be such hell. Counting teeth that fill your skull. Let's go somewhere. There must be something there. Run me for true we run. Giving up can't be such fun. I've nothing left. Cutting off my chest. Let's go somewhere. There must be something wrong.
That was Do What You Want Always by the Bored Nothing. You are on 2SER 107.3 and you are in The Vulture's Nest this morning with David and Sean. Earlier in the program, we were talking about Ash Barty's decision to bring her 11-week-old niece Olivia to her press conference after losing her last match at the Australian Open. The other story that really grabbed our attention this week had to do with some very powerful graffiti, and it comes from Victoria. A woman named Stacey Curry spray-painted messages to track down the father of her unborn child. Messages begging for him to get in touch were painted in local parks and on walls, in toilets, on barbecues. So the 36-year-old Stacey Curry appeared in court on Friday alongside the child's father. So I guess, spoiler alert for the good news there, the father was found. So Stacey's from Frankston in Victoria. She was in court. She had spray-painted graffiti asking where is Chris in a desperate attempt to track him down before her child was born. The 36-year-old has basically been, it's reported that she's become an overnight sensation after spray painting huge lettering across all these different places around the local area, trying to track him down. One of the notes in purple paint said, "Chris, you need to talk to me before baby is born, or don't bother after." So it first went viral after it was posted in the Frankston Community Notice Board Facebook page. It got 32,000 comments and 14,000 shares. So, hey.
Hey.
We've talked about the power of social media before. So, David, let's go back a step. Graffiti, have you got any thoughts on graffiti generally?
Generally? Yeah, it's a curious one, that. I mean, I do see it as street art, so I guess if it looks nice and has some kind of design about it, then I kind of don't mind it. When it's just tagging for the sake of it, or putting abuse somewhere, or you know, or defacing something that's got a kind of a particular symbolic meaning, like a war memorial or a concrete wall of Bondi, yeah, then I think don't like that. So I'm in two minds. I don't have a cut and dried view about it.
Do you think it's fair to say that people who tag something like a war memorial know the significance of the war memorial when they're doing it?
I reckon there's a pretty good chance they do.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty hard to plead ignorance on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just all this concrete thing. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
With all these names on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just thought I'd add my name. Yeah.
Yeah, at least I'm alive. Yeah.
So I do remember, I grew up in a country town. I don't remember the first incident, but I just remember being fascinated by graffiti when I saw it as a kid. I think our town had won, you know, the South Australian Tidy Town too many times. You know, there were talks of some sort of a ring in. It was just unnatural that any town should win it that many times. It was meant to be one per town, wasn't it? And then the competition disbands.
Yeah.
So
you don't think it was illegal?
Well, no. I'm saying I was surprised to see it because I think for a lot of my childhood, I just never saw any.
Yeah, I don't think. I think the first time I saw graffiti was when I would catch the train from Revesby, where I lived, a southwestern suburb of Sydney, if you don't know. And I would see graffiti along various, you know, overpasses and columns and, you know, the sides of houses and factories as you got closer to the city. And, it was a real mystery to me. I just thought who could be bothered, essentially. I mean, I just didn't know why you would. And sometimes some of it was funny. Some of it was political. So I could sort of see the point in that. It was free advertising for those doing it. They were getting their point across in a way that they probably couldn't any other way. So there was a purpose to the graffiti.
Wow, you just reminded me, going back to the 1980s on the northern beaches of Sydney, I think at the bus shelter at Long Reef, for years and years it had "Vote Mal, Eat Pal." And I haven't been there lately, but I think my last few trips to the northern beaches, I've gone past that bus shelter, it was still there.
Did that have any effect on your political leanings?
Even at the time I saw it, I had no idea what it even meant. And then only later on I realised it was probably from, you know, whatever, the 1970s, from Malcolm Fraser.
Would you have been more likely to eat Pal if it wasn't associated with Malcolm Fraser?
No, but I can't speak for everybody there. And there's probably somebody at home who did that graffiti who's still going. Oh, it's still there.
Still there.
Yeah, what have we? 50? Yeah, nearly 50 years. 40 years later.
Be a heritage site soon.
Yeah, I think like you, I when I saw something that was funny or thought provoking, I could appreciate it a little bit more. We did a school excursion to Adelaide, and so that sort of opened my mind and my eyes to what was possible in terms of graffiti. But like you, I think, when you just see tags or unintelligible squiggles, I think my initial reaction to that was, why, you know, that's so stupid. But I've sort of come to appreciate that may be that person's greatest ever achievement in their life. So to that person, that was something really significant.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks of a real need on the part of the person doing it to go to that effort, and things like spray painting trains and doing it in a really dangerous fashion you know, so that, you know, occasionally you know, you get killed in the act, or the, you know, the people doing the graffiti get killed. So, you know, I think it's a...
spurring a whole lot of graffiti, you know, memoriams.
Yeah.
From all your, yeah. The mates in your gang.
R.I.P. me. Yeah, so, I don't know. It just kind of always baffled me. And then the idea that in with hip-hop culture that it became, you know, an arguable art form within itself, and that, you know, and there are obviously some very creative people, and you'd see examples, particularly from, you know, New York and other American cities. But then the authorities would still spend all that money, you know, cleaning the trains up and, you know, taking it down. So I kind of got used to it. And I remember, too, the Berlin Wall, you know, on the western side, you know, when it was up. I mean, it was just absolutely, it was just graffiti from one end to the other. So it was a real, that was a real political statement, too. And it wasn't necessarily beautiful stuff, but it just basically said, look, we're free on this side and we can do whatever we want to the wall. Whereas on your side, you know, you've got, you know, 20 metres of no man's land with barbed wire, so you can't even get to the wall. You know, so the East Berlin side of it was pristine.
Yes.
So it said something about freedom that there was graffiti.
Yeah. So yeah. So graffiti is maybe a form of free speech.
Exactly. Yes.
Trying to track down the father of your children.
Yeah, it certainly is free speech. Yeah, and look, and onto the story. I mean, I've got to say, my heart goes out to all the other Chris's in Frankston who weren't the father of woman's unborn child. I mean, you know, somebody else should have started doing their own graffiti saying, look, I'm not that Chris.
Yeah.
You know,
quote Shaggy, it wasn't me.
It wasn't me. It was the other Chris.
How many Chris's are there in Frankston?
and I don't want to disparage this woman's intelligence, but gee, I hope she didn't have his phone number.
So, yeah, do you think that she had exhausted all other avenues? Do you think she'd put a free ad on Gumtree or maybe posted some stuff on Facebook beforehand?
Done the sign writing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or did she just have some spray cans at home? I was going to leave him a note, but my biro ran out and there's still plenty of ink in the spray can, so.
Yeah, I mean, just is Frankston a suburb or a town?
I think with urban sprawl, you could argue it's a suburb, but it's well and truly down the coast from Melbourne.
Yeah, I mean, there's possibly a bit of anger behind this because I just can't see that that's the most effective way of contacting someone who is, I mean, it's good, A, that she knew the name, the first name at least, of the father of her unborn child. So we know it wasn't just a sort of a random one-night stand event with a stranger. So beyond that, I'm thinking, you know, weren't there people, points of contact that didn't she know anything about this guy? That the best solution wasn't to do what she did.
I think she knew that he'd left her in the lurch.
That was a prime piece of evidence.
And maybe that was maybe there's a bit of public shaming here going on too. You know, it's like.
Yeah, well, I'd like to know how sheepish was Chris looking when he turned up with her in court.
It doesn't say, and the sentencing doesn't happen until when is it? March 24th. So we don't have the full outcome of that yet.
Yeah, does he have to clean it off? Who gets to? I mean,
well, we'll wait and see.
We'll
see what the sentence is.
Yeah. And how did he? There's a nice little movie here. You know, I mean, he must have at some point he's either seen or someone's told him about the graffiti. Hey, your name's Chris. Have you seen what's on the bus stop on the corner?
Yeah. So I think as you've suggested, it's narrowed it down. Chris, instead of just hey. The guy. You know, there'd be a lot more guys getting strange looks from their partners in Frankston if that was the case. You have been in the Vulture's Nest today with me, Sean Moran, and my guest, David Polterak. Thank you so much, David, for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sean.
Coming up on 2SER, we've got the best in arts, theatre, music, pop culture and all things creative on So Hot Right Now, curated for you by Nicole, and that is coming up at 11 o'clock. So to keep your eardrums humming for the next 20 seconds or so, let's just take a bit of surfing by 0.1. This is 2SER 107.3, Stories, Ideas and Music.